Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 16th of January 2024. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Malini Ladd and Margaret Simpson, MBE, and read by Rosemary Shergold, Hazel Hobbs and Malini Ladd. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
Hello, OxTalk listeners. It doesn't seem that long ago that I was wishing you a happy Christmas as part of the last OxTalk recording for 2023. Now it is January 2024 and the first OxTalk recording is being prepared. So I thought I would record my good wishes for the new year. I don't think it's too late, is it? I hope you enjoyed the activities of the festive season. The volunteers are looking forward to being part of the Ox Talk weekly recording. So happy new year and good wishes to you all from Margaret and all the Ox Talk volunteers. Happy New Year!
An Oxford resident has been awarded an MBE in the New Year's Honours for her services to the community, describing it as special and a privilege. 82-year-old Margaret Simpson's voluntary duties have involved substantial work with Oxfordshire County Council's Shared Life Scheme, pairing caring homes with adults who require additional support to cultivate their independence. Known for being a helping hand to numerous organisations catering for older citizens and those grappling with sight loss's effects, Margaret's benevolent efforts even extend to 15 years as the chair of the Oxford Talking Newspaper for the Blind, OxTalk. Margaret said, "It is an unbelievable honour which was hard to think of as real. When the letter arrived towards the end of November, I was absolutely astonished. I never thought I would receive an MBE. To be honoured for the work I have done and continue to do within the community makes it even more special and a privilege." Margaret has volunteered as a trustee for My Vision Oxfordshire, supported County Council's Trading Standards Electric Blanket Safety Checks, and is a creative ambassador for Age UK Oxfordshire. Margaret said, "I get so much out of my role with the Shared Lives team, and I'm proud to be part of such a hard-working, caring and committed team. I would encourage anyone who's interested in taking up a voluntary role within their community to consider being either a carer or a Shared Lives panel member.
An Oxfordshire Wildlife and Conservation charity is one step closer to securing a new home after surpassing the £50,000 mark in its bid to raise a total of £250,000. Oxfordshire Wildlife Rescue, brackets OWR, brackets, took to its online platforms to announce it had completed one-fifth of its current fundraising mission, in which trustees, staff and volunteers are striving to obtain a new centre with upgraded treatment facilities by next autumn. The charity announced in November that it had been served notice to leave its current rented premises in Blueberry by this October. The charity faces the risk of closure if it cannot purchase the new property lined up to become its new home before then. Reaching the £250,000 total will ensure the charity's continuation. OWR co-owner Luke Vaklevec said, "We have been extremely grateful for people's support and well wishes, and many have stood up with us to help keep the charity going by fundraising to secure OWR with its forever home, A Bleak Land. We set a target with the Board of Trustees to try and raise the first £50,000 by Christmas, a time frame of less than 2 months. OWR has not only reached the target of £50,000, but we have exceeded it in less than 2 months. This is amazing. Your support lights the fires in our hearts and souls to face this immense challenge head on. A huge thank you to everyone who has helped us reach this incredible milestone." A park near central Oxford was partly closed by police for several hours despite no crime having taken place. The car park and play park in Hinsey Park were cordoned off by Thames Valley Police last Wednesday morning, according to eyewitness reports. It came after the force received a third-party report of a possible incident in the park off Abingdon Road, but following a thorough investigation, police concluded that no crime had taken place and reopened the park in the afternoon. A force spokesman said, "We are not in a position to provide further details, but we can confirm no one has been injured and there is no danger to the wider public, and our investigation has concluded. We would like to thank the public for their patience during this time." The spokesman added, "We apologise for any disruption this may have caused."
A public disturbance described by police as an alfresco boxing fight involving youths, which started outside a town library, was broken up by officers. A small crowd of youths gathered outside Abingdon Library as two young men wearing boxing gloves reportedly sparred on the street. Two police community support officers, PCSOs, stopped the fight, gave words of advice and dispersed the youths from the library in the Charter. It was one of several interventions by PCSOs from the Abingdon neighbourhood team over the last week. PCSO Susie Morley patrolled hotspot areas in her bike, including Albert Park, Box Hill Park and Berry Street, and dealt with a report of antisocial behaviour in a town centre. She also responded to an alarm activation at a business in Audlett Drive with PCSO Maddie Highmore, although the building was all secure when checked. Two other PCSOs responded to a report of antisocial behaviour in North Abingdon.
The Vegan Camp Out Festival has announced the lineup for its event at Bicester Heritage this summer. Now in its eighth year, the festival will welcome big names including comedians Lee Mack and Simon Anstell, singer Kate Nash, and environmentalist TV presenter Chris Packham. Quick-witted Mac will be taking part in a live on-stage interview about his life, career and vegan journey. Vegan Campout will take place from July 26th to 29th at the motoring venue, which occupies the site of the former RAF Bicester base. The event will feature talks, live music and lots of plant-based food stalls. Other notable guests in the lineup for the event include vegan educator Earthling Ed and plant-based health professional Michael Greger. Also confirmed for the event are reggae artist Maka B, actor and animal rights activist Peter Egan, and vegan bodybuilder Nimai Delgado. Last summer's event was marred by the behaviour of some vegan activist vandals who graffitied pro-vegan slogans around the town. The event organisers were first to apologise on their behalf and offered one householder free tickets to the next festival. A 40-year-old nuclear fusion site has performed its final experiments, marking the end of an era for the groundbreaking project. The Joint European Torus (brackets JET brackets) at Cullum Centre for Fusion Energy near Abingdon was a magnetically confined plasma physics experiment, the focal point of the European Fusion Research Programme. Some 40 years after its first pulse in 1983, JET completed its mission after delivering pulse number 105,842. Chief Executive Officer of the UK Atomic Energy Authority, Professor Sir Ian Chapman, who was present in the control room for the final experiment, said, "This is the final milestone in JET's 40-year history. Those decades of research using JET by dedicated teams of scientists and engineers have played a critical role in accelerating the development of fusion energy."
Widespread flooding has continued to cause disruption and devastation throughout Oxfordshire across the weekend, prompting Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to visit Oxford. Mr. Sunak visited Oatney Island in an unannounced visit on Sunday morning, January the 7th, speaking to a small number of residents on doorsteps before heading to the Environment Agency depot at Oatney Lock. Speaking at the lock, Mr. Sunak said, "Flooding has been having a devastating impact on communities up and down the country. We have over 1,000 Environment Agency personnel on the ground in local communities helping. Over 200 pumps have been deployed. We've invested £5.2 billion in flood defences over the period in question. That's a record sum." One resident of Bridge Street with whom Mr. Sunak spoke, Julia Harmer Hunt, said she received little warning of his visit. Ms. Harmer Hunt said, "I was really surprised. I was given about 5 minutes' notice by Simon Collins of the Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme, who deals with the Environment Agency, and asked if I would speak to him. The Prime Minister nodded and said, 'Yes, yes,' when I said the government needed to do more. How he would change things remains to be seen." Other local residents also expressed their surprise at the Prime Minister's impromptu visit, further expressing beliefs that the government needed to do more to prevent further flooding, including dredging rivers and scrapping the Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme. Leila Moran, the MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, spoke out on X, Twitter, when she was not invited to the Prime Minister's visit. She said, "I was sorry not to be invited to meet the Prime Minister this morning when he visited West Oxford. I would have asked for support for local businesses struggling due to the Botley Road closure and for more resources to prevent flooding across West Oxfordshire after a worrying few days for many. Richard Powell, chair of the West Oxford Bowls Club near the River Thames on Botley Road, has shared his upset at the extent of the damage floodwater has caused to the club's two bowling greens and the clubhouse facilities at the start of the club's centenary year. He estimates that the total cost of repairs and refurbishments could be up to £20,000. Abingdon Road remained closed throughout the weekend with bus services diverted. Outside of Oxford, Abingdon and Wallingford have been hit hard by continued flooding.
Officers have given the green light to £500,000 contract for a proposed Oxfordshire railway line. The move is being described as a step towards fixing Oxford's chronic transport problems. A £498,799 sum of money will go towards design work around the two proposed stations of the Cowley Branch line at Littlemore and Blackbird Lees in South and East Oxford. The Cowley Branch line is only used by freight going to and from the BMW Mini plant and has been closed to passengers since 1963. Oxford City Council Cabinet Member for Housing, Linda Smith, said, "This is progress, and it is really welcome progress and part of the journey towards getting us where we need to be. This is the kind of ambitious project that could really make a difference." Ms. Smith added that the development was a further step towards fixing Oxford's chronic transport problems. The newly approved design work would assist in making sure stations are easily accessible. There had been unanimous support from city councillors to spend £4.56 million on creating a full business case for the proposed service during a council meeting in February this year. A report stated that much of the money would be funded from local landowners and then repaid or offset from future community infrastructure levy, brackets CIL, brackets payments. Under current proposals, the railway line will run through the Oxford Science Park and Oxford Business Park, connecting to the existing Oxford Parkway and Oxford Station, and will offer routes to Bicester and London, among other destinations. Funds are also being contributed to the project by Oxfordshire County Council. The stations would serve areas of Oxford where there are currently ongoing mass housing projects, such as the South Oxfordshire Science Village at Grenoble Road in the south of the city. Miss Smith added, "I think it will be really good for the area." Officers said of the decision, "This commission will support the successful strategy and implementation plan for a regionally significant transport scheme, comprising a funding and finance solution for the project delivery stage of CBL, as well as a spatial framework for the area most affected by the CBL. It will enable Oxford City Council and other local parties to ensure the rail scheme contributes to the creation and improvement of the neighbourhoods around the proposed two new stations." They added the decision would rely on high quality work at pace during 2024, including stakeholder engagement, infographics, concept design, and forming a successful working relationship with the Network Rail-led programme, as well as other supporting pieces of work coordinated by Oxford City Council.
Reporting on the junior doctors' strikes. Our emergency department colleagues are working exceptionally hard and have to prioritise patients who genuinely need emergency care. The strike comes at a time when the Trust hospitals are already overstretched. It hits as accident and emergency departments at the John Radcliffe and Horton General are underperforming. Just 3 out of 5 A&E patients are seen within 4 hours at both hospitals, the latest figures from October reveal. And COVID admissions have risen by 185% in the last 4 weeks, with 57 patients being treated by the Trust on December the 24th. Industrial action followed the breakdown of pay talks last month between the government and the British Medical Association, the Doctors' Union. It's affecting health services across the country, with Cheltenham General Hospital even forced to close its A&E for the duration of the strike. NHS England Medical Director Professor Sir Stephen Powis said the NHS was facing one of its most difficult years since 1948. Leila Moran, Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, criticised the government for its failed negotiations with the BMA. It's incredibly disappointing that the government failed to resolve these talks to protect and safeguard the NHS, she said. I know many people in Oxfordshire will be concerned about the impact of these strikes on our already stretched local services. The local NHS had advised people who need medical care to come forward as normal, especially in emergency and life-saving cases. Ms. Moran said her party supports a proper pay rise for junior doctors for the vital work they do. The MP continued, junior doctors are burned out, stressed and struggling with record backlogs of patients waiting for treatment. The 112,500 vacancies across the service are taking their toll, and the Conservative government has no real plans to fill them, let alone increase the number of staff. This Conservative government has run the NHS into the ground and taken its staff for granted. They have failed to get a grip on the multiple crises impacting our health and care services and left patients and staff to pay the price. But Robert Court, Conservative MP for Witney and West Oxfordshire, blamed the MMA, the BMA, for scaring patients. Our junior doctors here in Oxfordshire do an amazing job caring for us, but our healthcare heroes are being let down by their union, who are making unaffordable demands at a time of worldwide economic challenge, he said. The junior doctors' move to walk out continues to cause huge fear and anxiety for patients, and inevitably a risk to their safety when the NHS is at its busiest and most challenging time of the year. The BMA should stop scaring patients and work with the government, which has shown that it has the best interests of both patients and NHS workers at heart. Last year, the government accepted the independent pay review body's recommendations in full, meaning junior doctors have received an 8.8% pay rise on average, recognising the vital contribution that junior doctors make to our country. The BMA said the profession needs to be better valued.
One of the world's leading primate conservationists from Oxford Brookes University has been included in the New Year Honours List. Recognised as a global expert on nocturnal primates and a conservation partner with wildlife charity People's Trust for Endangered Species, PTES, Professor Nakaris will receive an OBE awarded by King Charles III. The award shows her unwavering dedication to slow lorises, unique venomous primates facing immense threat from illegal hunting and habitat destruction, as well as other nighttime primates since 1994. Years of persistent and fruitful work have earned her the esteemed OBE. Professor Nakaris's contribution includes conducting crucial studies on slender and pygmy lorises in India, Sri Lanka, and Cambodia, providing the scientific foundation that led to slow lorises being elevated to CITES Appendix 1, training wildlife officers in nocturnal mammal identification across 8 Asian nations and considerably more. Among the achievements is founding a world-recognized NGO, the Little Fireface Project, in 2011. The achievements of the Little Fireface project are substantial, extending from building wildlife bridges, ensuring lorises' safe passage, to providing major support to rescue and rehabilitation efforts of slow lorises. Professor Nakaris said, "Researching and understanding the threats small nocturnal mammals like slow and slender lorises face and finding viable solutions to protect them has been my life's work. To be recognised with an OBE is an incredible privilege." She extended her thanks to PTES for their unwavering support, stating that without them, it would have been impossible to advance the research and conservation of lorises extensively. Having been supported by PTES since 2002, Professor Nakaris is among the five conservation partners receiving up to £100,000 over 5 years. This valuable resource enables efficient conservation action. Professor Nakaris has played a crucial role in the conservation of every loris species, collectively classified as threatened due to illegal pet trade and forest loss for agricultural expansion in Asia. Aside from conservation, her work has an impressive academic impact, penning 331 research papers, earning almost 9,000 citations across ethnozoology, anthropology, and conservation education, and supervising over 160 PhD and MSc students. Naida Al-Falaji, the CEO of PTES, praised Professor Nakaris's recognition on the honours list, said, "We are absolutely delighted that Anna has received an OBE for her services to conservation, which is so hugely deserved." The New Year honours list celebrate outstanding accomplishments and services of exceptional individuals across the UK every year. Professor Nakaris will collect her OBE later this year.
A huge milestone in the first connection stage of East-West Rail between Bicester and Milton Keynes is cause for celebration, says a councillor. A track construction train has made its final visit to the stretch of railway, with track laying now 99% complete between North Oxfordshire and Bletchley in the Buckinghamshire New Town. With passenger services due to start between the two towns in 2025, a spokesperson said the milestone brings the benefits of the rail project even closer to local communities, enabling better access to jobs, education and healthcare, and making it easier to see family and friends and travel for leisure. Once completed, there will be 66 kilometres of new track between Bletchley and Bicester, with the final welding, stressing and tamping track alignment works to be completed in the new year. Nick Moyer, town councillor for Bicester North and Caversfield, said, "The M40 and the Chiltern line to London and Birmingham have already made Bicester a popular place for people to live in and for companies to relocate to. The extension of the EWR project to Bletchley will, in my view, provide additional benefits to the people who live here, and it will make Bicester an even better place to invest in. Unlike HS2, EWR is using existing track bed for this section, and we in Bicester will directly see benefits from it. All that being said, we must not lose sight of the situation at London Road, which needs vehicular crossing, and the finance to cover it and the political will to deliver it. Installation of the signalling and telecoms equipment needed to operate the railway is also underway, and once completed will be followed by dynamic train testing before the railway opens in 2025. Once open, this section of line will provide direct passenger services between Oxford, Bletchley and Milton Keynes for the first time in over 50 years. This phase of the project is being delivered by the East West Rail Alliance, which was appointed by Network Rail to construct the Bicester to Bletchley section of the new railway. The track itself has been laid by a state-of-the-art new track construction train, one of only two such machines in the whole country. EWR Alliance Director Mark Kuzner said, "It's good to see the progress we've made with our track construction programme in last 12 to 18 months. Witnessing the 58th and final track construction train shift is testament to the combined efforts of the entire team. And with 99% of the rail now laid, the project is in a healthy position to complete the final section of track installation early this year."
A former television news chief from West Oxfordshire has spoken of his surprise at being awarded an OBE in the New Year honours list. John Riley, who stepped down as head of news at Sky News late last year, was recognised for services to journalism. He said, "It was a surprise. A brown envelope dropped through the letterbox on the doormat in Whitney 7 or 8 weeks ago now. I'm particularly surprised because back in September I gave a speech about how the royal family control coverage of their activities." Mr. Riley was the editor-in-chief of Sky News from 2006 until last year. Announcing his departure, he described running Sky News as exhilarating, but added, "I can't pretend there haven't been tricksy days." His leadership oversaw what he said was an ongoing saga of events and characters. He said it included historic tipping points. Among the many were the 2008 financial crash, the Arab Spring, the death of Princess Diana, 9/11, the rise of ISIS, the European migrant crisis, 4 UK general elections in 9 years, Brexit, the election of Donald Trump, the COVID pandemic, the murder of George Floyd, the Taliban's capture of Kabul, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the death of Queen Elizabeth, the political turmoil with 3 prime ministers in 7 months. Mr. Riley started his career as a BBC graduate trainee in the 1980s, then a programme editor of ITV's News at 10, before joining Sky News in 1997. In 2021, the Royal Television Society, brackets RTS, brackets, gave him the Outstanding Contribution Award for journalism. The judges said he had effected genuine change in our industry. They added, "His style is innovative, idiosyncratic. His integrity, influence and authority, colossal." He is a trustee of the NCTJ and the chair of the Geddes Trust, set up to promote excellence journalism among Oxford University students. He was educated at Durham University and the Wharton School of Business in the United States. Mr. Riley said, "I think the award is recognition of the importance of independent news organisations like Sky News, which are a beacon for hard, fact-based agendas in a world awash with disinformation, half-truth and rumour." Dana Strong, CEO of Sky Group, said Mr. Riley had taken Sky News's influence to new levels and kept it vibrant. She said, "His commitment to having teams on the ground has been a key differentiator, and his equal focus on keeping our people safe in challenging times has been outstanding." When John accepted the RTS award, he talked about his belief in and lifetime commitment to accurate, original, impartial journalism. And that will be his lasting legacy.
Wild swimmers said it was no surprise when they had to cancel their New Year's Day swim, as a sewage treatment works upstream had been discharging since the early hours of the morning. Like thousands across the country who enjoy a festive dip on Boxing Day and New Year's Day, Oxford swimmers used to flock to Airman's Bridge in Wolvercote. But on this New Year's Day, sewage had been pumping into the water from the Finstock sewage treatment works since 3:30 a.m. The discharges flow into the River Evenlode that flows to the Thames and Wolvercote Mill Stream. Madeline Metcalf, who lives in Meadow Prospect, said, "I was really looking forward to the annual New Year's Day swim at the bathing place in Wolvercote. And yet again, more illegal sewage discharging into our beautiful river has ruined plans." Mike Benson, who would normally swim in the Thames, said, "It's no less disgusting or disgraceful just because it's expected." A Thames Water spokesperson said it was the first company to provide live alerts for all untreated discharges and to make this data available as a map on its website and through an open data platform for third parties such as swimming and environmental groups to use.
Permission is being sought to increase accommodation for homeless people at a former Oxford Church Hall. The Temple Cowley United Reformed Church building in Oxford Road provides shared space for a maximum of 4 homeless people at the moment. But the Emmaus Oxford charity is looking to expand this provision to allow a further homeless person to stay at the premises. The charity is also intending to convert 2 existing flats into 5-bedroom accommodation for former homeless residents to use at the site. A number of extensions and alterations to facilitate this would be required at number 169 and number 167 Oxford Road. A statement from Emmaus Oxford said, "We believe the proposed works are beneficial to the area. They will enhance and increase accommodation for Emmaus Oxford, thus expanding their ability to tackle homelessness in Oxford." Temple Cowley City Councillor Sajad Malik, who is an independent, said, "The Emmaus residential block is very well managed. It's a great place for people to get support." Thames Valley Police has not issued an outright objection to the application, but it asked for concerns surrounding security and cycle storage to be addressed. There are no public objections listed on the City Council website. An Oxfordshire County Council Highways Officer consultee comment says, "The proposed change of use is unlikely to generate a significant increase in parking demand when compared to the existing use." Emmaus Oxford proposals also seek to bring 10 new bicycle spaces to the premises. A planning letter from Thames Valley Police, submitted as part of the application, said, "Cycle theft is a very significant crime type within Oxford, and it is imperative that secure and convenient storage is provided to residents." Highways Officer Ben Cobb concluded, "The proposals are unlikely to have a detrimental impact on the local highway network in traffic and safety terms." Oxfordshire County Council does not object to the granting of planning permission. Emmaus Oxford has been situated at its Temple Cowley site since the mid-2000s. The Temple Cowley United Reformed Church was founded in 1878 and cites a history of support for individual undocumented migrants. But the church no longer utilises its hall opposite Cowley Police Station, because the Temple Cowley United Reform Establishment no longer exists. The religious institution had its last service in 2018 before being replaced by the Grace Church Cowley. Emmaus Oxford claims there is general positive support for the proposal as the plan increases supporting housing provision for the charity. A decision on the planning applications will be decided in due course by the City Council's Planning Committee.
A team of nature lovers has surpassed the halfway point in laying a new hedge by the Arboretum at the Earth Trust in Little Whitnam. The team, named Hartley's Hedges, is a hedge-laying group started by volunteer Paul Hartley, which has expanded to comprise 12 experienced volunteers who operate under his guidance. The volunteers are part of the Earth Trust land management team, who also work with rangers. Over the last 3 months, the group has covered approximately 80 metres in 10 sessions, using a variety of methods to create a newly laid hedge, helping to define the boundary and providing a habitat for small mammals and birds. A spokesman for the Earth Trust said, "The hedge's efforts have been supported by our weekly land volunteer groups with their hazel coppicing work in our woods, producing hundreds of stakes and binders for the team. Wallingford Green Gym have lent a hand too, helping to clear the piles of brush created from the cuttings. The team is back on site this month, working on the next phase until the end of the hedge laying season, which typically stretches to the end of March."
The Cotswolds Wildlife Park is celebrating the 50th birth of a Chapman zebra at the park, marking an important milestone in the park's history. The newborn, named Flora, is the 10th offspring of parents Stella and SpongeBob, signifying a remarkable success to the park's breeding program. Cotswold Wildlife Park is the only zoological collection in the UK to have successfully bred the African species so far this year. Visitors can meet the latest addition to the zebra family opposite the large rhino paddock in the park. Tracing back its history, the Cotswold Wildlife Park welcomed its first zebras, a pair of Grevy's zebras, back in 1972, originally purchased from the Copenhagen Zoo a year earlier. The male zebra was exceedingly trusting for a stallion zebra. The pair were first shown to the public in March 1972, making the national press when one of them was captured by a photographer chasing a white rhino around the paddock. Later, in 1978, 8 years after the park had opened to the public, the park welcomed its first Chapman zebra, a species named after revered conservationist William Chapman. Since then, the zebras have been an integral part of the park community, symbolising its ethos by replacing the red panda in the park's original logo. Curator of Cotswold Wildlife Park, Jamie Craig, said, "Repeating successes can be tricky when breeding animals, so to have reached the milestone of 50 foals since we opened is a real triumph for all the dedicated keepers, past and present, who have cared for our zebras over the years at the park." Flora has been impressing the visitors with her pace, galloping across the paddock. The need for speed becomes crucial for zebras' survival in the wild as they outwit predators such as lions and hyenas. Zebras are capable of running at speeds exceeding 35 miles per hour, with foals getting on their feet soon after birth and being able to run with the herd a few hours after being born. In addition to the birth of Flora, 2023 had been a milestone year for the Cotswold Wildlife Park. The park not only became the only zoological collection in the UK to breed the critically endangered greater bamboo lemur, but it also stood as the single global zoological collection to breed Mexican leaf frogs. Additionally, Cotswold Wildlife Park welcomed the birth of two white rhinos within a week in August, taking the tally to a total of 11 rhino calves in 11 years.
Oxford Bus Company has revealed the unusual items which were left on its buses by passengers last year. Among the belongings left on buses and coaches in 2023 were a sex toy, a pair of professional boxing gloves, an Egyptian papyrus and an antique musket. An unusually high volume of musical instruments was also misplaced, including a saxophone, clarinet, flute, violin and trombone. The most common items left on vehicles were mobile phones, umbrellas, bags, passports and ID and shopping. Staff at the Oxford Bus Company Customer Service Department recorded 2,950 in 2023 and 750 were successfully returned to their owners, a near 50% improvement in returns compared to the previous year. Oxford Bus Company was the first bus operator in the UK to use new technology to make it easier for passengers to be reunited with their lost belongings. In 2019, it linked up with the innovative Not Lost platform so it can digitally lock misplaced items quickly, with the system helping to match them to the rightful owner. Passengers who reclaim items pay a £1 administration and storage fee for the return of their belongings to help towards costs. There is also a postal service option available for returns. Unrecovered items are donated to local charities or safely disposed of after a set period. Andy Morrison, head of customer experience at Oxford Bus Company, said, "A lot of items are left on our buses and coaches, and we highlight the unusual ones to remind people that lost things are kept. It's always worth checking with us if you lost something on our services, as we may well be able to assist. Misplacing belongings can be a stressful experience, and so we use technology to help make it easier for people to get their items back. We're proud of our record at managing lost property and work hard to help reunite items with their owners. Last year, while we saw a similar volume of lost items, there was a significant increase in people securing their return, which is great news." Oxford Bus Company provides extensive bus routes in Oxford City and Abingdon, luxury coach services to Heathrow and Gatwick airports, the Brooks Bus Service in partnership with Oxford Brookes University, and the prestigious Park and Ride Service, plus City Sightseeing Oxford, the hop-on, hop-off, open-top bus tours of Oxford. The Not Lost platform combines various features, including image recognition and powerful search functionality, with a simple, intuitive interface, transforming the way lost property is managed. Oxford Bus Company has previously revealed lost items in recent years, which have included a lightsaber, a fireman's hat, a Soviet hat, a letter detailing sexual fantasies, a Donald Trump toilet roll, and Voldemort's wand. The top 10 lost items in 2023 were an antique musket, professional boxing gloves, saxophone, clarinet, a gentleman's cane, sex toy, nitrous gas, Egyptian papyrus, a trombone, and underwear.
There is more than one way to get your voice heard if you feel strongly about a local issue. Here is a guide on what you can do if you have something to say on a matter within your neighbourhood. Consultation surveys. Councils often run consultation surveys designed to garner public feedback. An ongoing county one relates to the budget draft for 2023-24, which will remain open until January the 10th. Feedback can be submitted via an online form and this year's proposals also include an online budget simulator to challenge respondents with the task of balancing their own budget. Other matters on which the Council has consulted the public include special educational needs, brackets, SEND, brackets, provision and traffic restrictions. Write to your MP. You can contact your MP via email or through phoning in with anything you wish to bring to their attention or for support with a campaign. There are 6 MPs for Oxfordshire, each representing a constituency area, and you can find out who your MP is easily online. You can also contact your councillor on issues of local importance with their contact details listed on the websites of the authorities they represent. Submit opinions to the media. Share what you think by submitting your view in a letter to your local newspaper. Letters submitted cover issues ranging from transport to public toilets to events. Alternatively, let people know what you think by commenting on social media posts and online articles. Council meetings. Attending council meetings can be a good way of sharing your views on an issue. You can often register to speak at a meeting to comment online from the agenda webpage, by telephone or via email. In many cases, you will need to submit a summary of your question in advance. It is worth noting that public addresses and questions will often be professionally filmed and posted online. Protest. If there is an issue you feel strongly about, there is also the option to protest. The right to peaceful protest in the UK stems from rights to freedom of expression and freedom of assembly.
1 in 10 adults in Oxford are living with problems with their joints, bones or muscles, new figures show. The figures come amid warnings about the impact of these conditions on people's well-being and employment prospects. Musculoskeletal health conditions include common ailments like back or neck pain and issues that impact the joints, such as arthritis. New figures from NHS England suggest 10.5% of people aged 16 and over in Oxford had a musculoskeletal condition as of 2023. This was below the England average of 18.4%. In addition, 7.2% of adults in Oxford reported having 2 or more conditions, with one of them being a problem with their joints, bones or muscles. The figures further show 826 people in Oxford had rheumatoid arthritis in Oxford in the year to March, a condition which causes swelling and a stiffness in the joints. On January the 10th, Labour MP Margaret Greenwood, former Shadow Work and Pension Secretary, told Parliament musculoskeletal problems inflict a terrible human cost and add to government spending on social services and the NHS. She urged the government to adopt a cross-departmental strategy to tackle the issue. A government spokesman said, "We are committed to providing the support people with musculoskeletal and other major health conditions need to find a job that best suits them. With inactivity down by over 300,000 since the pandemic peak, our back-to-work plan will help up to a further 1.1 million disabled people with long-term health conditions or the long-term unemployed to look for and stay in work."
A traffic improvement scheme on the A34 has officially been signed into a council's budget, along with the developer having been chosen. Oxfordshire County Council has approved the inclusion of the Homes England capital grant of £17 million towards the Abingdon Lodge Hill scheme on its capital programme. The authority to delegate a contract to the developer has also been given, which is due to be signed next month. The junction north of Abingdon on the route to Oxford only has north-facing slips, but the proposed scheme will improve junction capacity at Lodge Hill, as well as making cycling and walking easier and safer in the area. County Councillor for Abingdon North, Nathan Lee, said, "I'm really pleased the County Council has been successful in gaining all the funding needed to allow the A34 Lodge Hill scheme to progress. This week, as a Cabinet, we've been able to sign off on incorporating the £17 million grant from Homes England within the capital programme, and it's encouraging that the design and build contract is due to be signed imminently too. Next summer will bring about the start of the build phase. We've all been waiting a long time for this, and when it comes, it will be a milestone we can all celebrate." The junction transformation will allow for shorter journey times by adding new south-facing slip roads to the A34, cycle and pedestrian safety improvements, and lay-by upgrades on the major A road. The council had secured funding for the scheme from several sources, including contributions from developers, the housing growth deal, funding directly from the Department of Levelling Up Housing and Communities. Following a review of the scheme in summer of 2022, a funding gap was identified. This is when Homes England, the government's housing arm, awarded £17 million to the project. County Councillor for Abingdon South, Neil Fawcett, said, "It's more than 20 years since the full junction at Lodge Hill was first written into the County Council's transport plan. I'm delighted to have been at the table when the full funding package was finally agreed. Now that it's got the go-ahead, I look forward to the build contract being signed in the new year." Mr. Lay said councillors and MP Leila Moran had worked extremely hard to get approval.
South Oxfordshire Food and Education Alliance, brackets SOFEA, brackets, a charity rooted in Didcot, has celebrated the start of its 10th anniversary with the launch of a new project and interior enhancements. Following a site redevelopment in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, a new training kitchen has been installed in the education space at its Trident Business Park base with the help of funding from both the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority and Magnox, brackets, now known as Nuclear Restoration Services, brackets, NRS, brackets, brackets. The kitchen design and build team, along with invited guests, were welcomed to SOFEA last month to watch representatives from NRS cut the ribbon to officially open the Nourish and Flourish kitchen project before lunch was served by Alex Mackay, ex-cookery school director at Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons. Mr. Mackay, now a chief at the kitchen, has helped SOFEA create a kitchen that enables learners and trainees to develop new skills and creative talents. The cookery school has been designed to bring the local community into the heart of SOFEA by working with members of the Didcot Primary Care Network, community larders, voluntary sector partners and others, supporting people to learn to cook healthy food for themselves and their family using food that would otherwise go to waste. The project, led by Kerry Locke, was created with the support by Brendan Mallard of Object Place Space, Chris Noyes of CNS Builders, and others local and substantial partners.
A sub-postmaster wrongly accused of stealing money from the post office has told how he was sectioned three times as the ordeal took its toll on his mental health. Balvinder Gill, 45, started running the post office in Cowley Road in 2003. He was bankrupted trying to repay the £108,000 the post office said he stole. His mother, Kashmir, who worked at the same branch, was found guilty of stealing £57,000 in 2009. Her conviction was overturned by the Court of Appeal in 2021. Rishi Sunak said on Wednesday that a new law would be introduced clearing the names of hundreds of people wrongly convicted because of faulty Horizon IT software. It came after ITV drama Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office caused a public outcry. Mr. Gill called his family's experience an indirect, oppressive kind of racism. He said, "My parents were spoken to as if they were idiots because they're not white. They were made to feel like they didn't understand the system and that they were stupid." He told BBC Newsnight he knew from the very start there was something wrong with the Horizon system. "I had a background in maths and computer science, so I thought I was quite savvy with IT," he said. Mr. Gill, who was newly married at the time, said he paid the shortfalls back by robbing Peter to feed Paul, using money from the retail side of his business to compensate the shortfall. "Three times I've been sectioned for mental health," he said. "Most of the decade after it happened, I was hounded literally every month for money from them against this debt. They had civil proceedings to try and secure the debt against me. In the first decade, we were so poor, I was giving them 30% of what I earned. You were never means tested. I remember having to take short-term Wonga loans, not having petrol to go to work." Mr. Gill told the BBC he was happy to hear that action would be taken. He said he had received very nominal compensation because he became bankrupt, which means the money owed remains part of his original estate. In 2019, Mrs. Gill told the Oxford Mail of the nightmare experience that destroyed her life. She said, "My family was broken. We're never going to recover from this. I told them they could take my house or anything they wanted. I was devastated, as they also said we were the only case." In the end, Mrs. Gill and her husband Gernon and family felt helpless against the accusations and decided to pay the £57,000 to the company, money she and her husband had been saving for their retirement. They hoped that the post office would not proceed with any charges. Mrs. Gill said her fear of her reputation being destroyed was more important than anything else at that moment, as her job had meant everything to her. As a first-generation immigrant from a small village in India, she said, "I wasn't educated and I was really happy because this was a job that I could handle. My family was so proud of my job and achievements. Struggling to find a new job because of her criminal record, she spent the 5 years after her wrongful conviction pot washing in the back of an Indian takeaway. She said, "I cried in court every time. I didn't want to live anymore."
It's extraordinary that a government agency has suffered no consequences for damaging a water pipe below a crucial Oxford Bridge, a councillor has said. An Environment Agency boat struck the pipe beneath Osney Bridge, which carries Botley Road over the River Thames, in April 2021. Repairs to the pipe shut Botley Road for several months, causing traffic misery. And the disruption is expected to return as Thames Water plan further repairs, which will reduce the bridge to a single lane of traffic from March 2024 to March 2025. The Environment Agency has not apologised for the damage or paid a fine. Susanna Pressel, councillor for Osney and St Thomas on Oxford City Council, said it was unacceptable. There'd be no public apology, no fine, nothing. The delay in Thames Water starting their work to replace the water pipe under Osney Bridge seems to be caused mainly by the Environment Agency, she said. This is extraordinary, especially in view of the fact that it was the Environment Agency that carelessly damaged the water pipe in the first place. They seem to have suffered no consequences for this. No public apology, no fine, nothing. I wouldn't want to see the public sector Environment Agency pay a fine to the private sector Thames Water. but one would have thought the least they could do is to reply quickly to questions from Thameswater and be as helpful as possible, which they have not been doing so far. The three-phase repair project by Thameswater will close the pedestrian footpath, cycle lane and carriageway on the north side of the bridge. The River Thames under the bridge will be closed to boats in March 2024 and again between November 2024 and March 2025. Thameswater has been criticised for not coinciding the work with Networks Rail's hugely disruptive closure of Botley Road. Oseney Bridge has hardly been used since Network Rail started its £160 million scheme to improve Oxford Railway Station in April 2023. But when Botley Road reopens in October 2024, Oseney Bridge will have a heavy traffic flow, which is when the restrictions by Thameswater will be put in place. MPs, councillors and business owners have warned there will be traffic chaos. Thameswater has the ability to recover costs from third parties for damage to its assets once repairs have been completed, but a spokeswoman would not confirm if the company would seek costs from the Environment Agency after the Oseney Bridge work is finished. An Environment Agency spokesperson said the position of the pipe is a matter for Thameswater. She claimed another boat hit the pipe shortly after it was clipped by the Environment Agency vessel.
Householders can now dispose of a certain amount of DIY waste for free at the county's recycling centres as long as they book online in advance. The booking system was launched by Oxfordshire County Council, and the move follows a change in government legislation which came into force last week. Oxfordshire County Council has charged for DIY waste for more than 20 years, with the current rates in place since October 2017. About a third of local authorities impose charges. The government hopes the move will help reduce fly tipping, but the council estimates that scrapping the charges could cost taxpayers more than £500,000 a year. Dr. Pete Sudbury, Cabinet Member for Climate Change Delivery and Environment, said, "We hope people will quickly get used to this new way of doing things and find it a convenient way of disposing of their free allocation of DIY waste." He said the booking system will ensure the free provision is not abused and the cost to our council taxpayers are minimised. Residents will need to register their address, vehicle registration number, email address, and the date they wish to visit, along with the site they want to use for a single visit. They will then receive an immediate email confirmation of their booking, which must be shown to the site team on arrival. Residents may be charged if they do not stick to their booked date.
A new application to demolish Bicester's old Magistrates' Court is expected to be decided this week, with the site earmarked for flats by developers. Plans submitted by GG Oxford Investments late last year are looking for prior approval for the demolition of the locally listed building known as Waverley House. Demolition of the two-storey building would take a total of 6 weeks to complete, the application says. The developers also have a separate planning application under consideration to build 33 apartments on the site, believing it is an optimal location given its proximity to services and facilities. This follows on from a previous application by the developer to convert the former Magistrates' Court into 48 flats. The previous application was refused by the council, and the developer also lost its subsequent appeal. The application was refused because the council deemed the proposed building to be too large for the site, and because of a lack of parking spaces. The developer also had a previous demolition plan submission refused, as it did not have written clarification regarding tree protection in the area. The plans have since been revised, and a decision on the new demolition plans is expected to be made by January the 17th, according to Cherwell District Council. In the lead-up to the decision, several objections have been made on the Council's planning portal. Michael Wayne, a Conservative Independent Alliance County Councillor for Bicester, said, "Demolition of this building will irreparably change Queen's Avenue from what was planned in 1953, the year of our late Queen's coronation, to be a broad avenue of trees with setback buildings to give a truly open public thoroughfare in the centre of our town. If you were to talk with Bicester residents, you would clearly understand their fondness for this central avenue." Tom Webster, who lives in the town, said, "The building is a historic part of Bicester's history and is close to the conservation area of Bicester. The current building has many possibilities for a community-run building to support local clubs and activities." Another householder, Sharon Cure, said, "I would wish for the historically important building to be used for the good of the people of Bicester, and believe that the possibility of funding this should be properly explored." Previously, Les Sibley, Cherwell District Councillor for Bicester West, said he was looking into securing community asset status for a magistrate's court to prevent it being demolished and replaced by flats. Mr. Sibley has said he thinks the developer should leave the magistrate's court for the community and suggested another site for its flats. He also raised concerns around the development being built on land at risk of flooding and there being no space for waste from the flats. The councillor also highlighted the building is an important heritage asset for the town. A spokesman for RCA Regeneration, acting on behalf of the developer, said, "GG Oxford Investments are strongly of the opinion that redevelopment for housing represents the most efficient and sustainable use of this brownfield urban site, given its proximity to shops, services and facilities."
With the prospect of a general election, plans for a new football stadium and the reopening, then partial closure, of a major city road, 2024 will be a busy year in politics for Oxfordshire. Here's a roundup of what to expect over the next 12 months. A general election is not guaranteed to happen this year, but experts believe Rishi Sunak will go to the polls in May or in the autumn. Eddie Reeves, the Tory leader on Oxfordshire County Council, believes that traditionally gold standard Conservative seats in the county are under threat. Writing for the Conservative home blog, he said seats like Henley and Tame, Wantage and Didcot and Banbury could all go at the next election unless the party invests time and resource into them now. And while not always an accurate yardstick, the Tories' damning local election results in Oxfordshire show they are more vulnerable now than ever. In all likelihood, it's unlikely the party will lose the seats, but if ever there was an election where this could happen, it will be this one. Labour looked to claw back majority. Just as the Tories have always enjoyed safe seats in Oxfordshire, Labour has always dominated elections on Oxford City Council. But the party has seen its majority disappear after losing 10 councillors over its stance on the Middle East conflict. It will hope to claw back its lost seats at the elections in May. Housing frenzy north of Oxford. Sticking with the City Council, it has been criticised in recent years for pushing its housing need into neighbouring districts. The area north of Oxford has taken on much of the slack, with major developments like Oxford North already under construction, and hundreds of new homes approved for Kidlington last year, and many more large housing applications expected this year. Plans in the pipeline include a proposal for more than 1,000 homes on North Oxford Golf Club, 1,450 homes at Bayswater Brook and 800 homes in Water Eaton. Merton College's plans for 540 homes in Yarnton will also be decided by a government inquiry starting on February the 13th. Stadium plans to gather pace. As well as new homes, Kidlington is also bracing for a brand new football stadium. Oxford United has agreed a lease with the County Council for an area of land, and the club will develop more detailed plans for the stadium this year as it looks to secure planning permission from Charwell District Council. But the Yellows must also iron out issues with the County Council over its plans to shut Oxford Road on match days, which is strongly opposed by the authority. Gove to decide the fate of H1 F1. Another major planning decision which could be made in 2024 is over the controversial H1 F1 scheme in South Oxfordshire. The £269 million project, which would involve building new bridges, a dual carriageway and bypass, was rejected by Oxford County Council in July. But the decision was called in by Levelling Up Secretary Michael Gove, who will make the final decision after an inquiry starting in February. Botley Road saga to continue. After a year from hell caused by the closure of Botley Road, traders will welcome the reopening of the arterial route in October. But the disruption is not expected to go away. To the dismay of traders, Thames Water is set to reduce Oseney Bridge to a single line of traffic till March 2025, while it replaces a water pipe said to have been damaged by an environment agency boat on the Thames. The last time the road was partially closed for work on the pipe in 2022, it caused horrific tailbacks. More to come with the LTN debate. With no major decision over the scheme in 2024, it is unlikely the LTN debate will reach the same fever pitch as it did last year. The Liberal Democrats and the Greens will fight tooth and nail to keep the LTNs, while Conservatives and potentially Labour look to remove some restrictions. Some bollards will be placed with ANPR cameras, which could raise concerns when exempt taxi drivers start using LTN streets.
The Archbishop of Canterbury called on people to stand with those suffering because of war and to seek to make peace in his New Year message delivered at RAF Bryce Norton. The Most Reverend Justin Welby said, "Wars seem everywhere at the moment," in his annual Start of the Year address. He said, "Wars seem everywhere at the moment, wars we know about, wars forgotten. I've seen for myself the ongoing human cost of war. In Ukraine, I went to Bucha, where evidence of atrocities was found. I've met Ukrainian refugees, most recently in Georgia and Romania, families having to start again in a new country. I've met refugees from Nagorno-Karabakh, brackets a territory disputed between Azerbaijan and Armenia, brackets, after they have left their homes because of conflict. And in Jerusalem last October, I sat and listened to some of those traumatised by war, Palestinian and Israeli. Jesus Christ tells us to stand with those suffering because of war and to seek to make peace. It came after Russia launched a fresh drone assault on Ukraine on Saturday night, hitting the capital, Kyiv, and border city, Kharkiv.
BMW Mini's $600 million investment has been highlighted as a reason why manufacturers believe the UK is becoming more competitive in manufacturing. Research suggests manufacturers believe the UK is a more competitive place to locate their activities compared with a year ago. An increasing number of firms say they are moving ahead of their European rivals, although they remain wary of the huge threat to their competitiveness posted by the US, India and China, according to a report. Business and Trade Secretary Kemi Badenoch named BMW's $600 million investment to build the next generation of electric minis in Oxfordshire as one reason why the country's plan for manufacturing is working. A survey of more than 200 senior manufacturing executives by Make UK and PwC found that after a difficult few years through the pandemic and rising energy prices, there are optimistic signs. Firms were said to be more bullish about the prospects for manufacturing in 2024. Stephen Phipson, chief executive of Make UK, said, "The last few years have been a rollercoaster of emotions for manufacturers, yet they have more than demonstrated their resilience time after time. We're now seeing some hope that conditions may be improving amid a more supportive and stable policy environment, but this must be cemented within a long-term industrial strategy. While undoubted challenges remain, the accelerating use of digital technologies, our strength in innovation and expansion into new markets sets the scene for manufacturing to be at the heart of efforts to boost growth." Mr. Badenoch said, "This government is working hard to ensure the UK remains a global hub for manufacturing, and it's paying off with the UK overtaking France to become the world's eighth largest manufacturing economy. Our plan for UK manufacturing is working, from Tata's investment in a 4 billion gigafactory in Somerset, to BMW's 600 million investment to build the next generation of electric minis in Oxfordshire. The government and the private sector are working hand in glove to create jobs, grow the economy, and secure the future of great British manufacturing." Last year, BMW revealed plans to pump the money into their mini factories in Oxford and Swindon, with ambitions to transform the plant in Cowley to all-electric production by 2030. The Oxford Mini plant already produces the Mini 3-door, the Mini 5-door, as well as the Mini Clubman and the Mini Electric. This year, the plant will start producing the next generation Mini 3-door and Mini 5-door with combustion engines, as well as the new Mini Convertible. And from 2026, two new all-electric Mini models will be built at the plant. BMW claims the investment will secure more than 4,000 jobs.
Leading children's doctors have implored the government to urgently introduce a game-changer vaccine to tackle a virus which Oxford scientists say kills 83 young people every year. According to the Oxford Vaccine Group, respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, accounts for around 450,000 GP appointments, 29,000 hospital admissions and 83 deaths every year in children and adolescents in the UK, the majority in infants. In June, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation advised ministers that they should press ahead with a vaccination programme for the virus, for both babies and older adults. But the government is yet to respond to the call. Leading children's doctors said it was too late for the programme to be rolled out for this winter, but urged ministers to ensure the programme was in place this year. The Royal College of Paediatricians and Child Health said every year RSV grinds children's hospital service to a halt, and that a vaccination programme could ease the burden of the virus on both families and the pressures that it causes the NHS. Dr. Camilla Kingdon, president of the RCPCH, said, "RSV is a massive problem every single winter. We've now got a way out of it. We just need to get on and do it." She added, "We were thrilled when the Joint Committee published their guidance in support of a national rollout of an RSV vaccination programme. And since then, we've been waiting. I'm not reassured that much has happened in terms of next steps. I'm not in any way diminishing the fact that some very careful thought needs to be gone through to understand what's going to be the most efficient way of doing this and then the practicalities of how to do that. If we really want to make a difference for next winter, because this winter we're clearly too late to influence in any way in terms of RSV, we've really got to get our skates on. And so as a college, you know, our message is very simple. Please, can we make this a priority? It could be a game-changer for the winter 2024-25 winter. But if we really want to make a difference to that winter, we've got to hurry up and make some decisions and get cracking." She said this year had been particularly bad for RSV cases, adding, "Without a shadow of doubt, I can tell you that as a paediatrician, every single winter, RSV is a major problem. It's a big problem for babies and parents, but it's also a big problem for NHS services."
Increasing the biodiversity of your garden doesn't have to be hard or compromise the way your garden looks. Here are a few small changes you could make to the way you manage your garden that can bring major benefits to the creatures that call it home. Restore nature in your back garden. The UK is one of the most nature-depleted countries in the world. The good news is that you can help boost wildlife populations where you live. Here are 5 top tips on restoring your back garden into a place that welcomes nature. Plant native vegetation. One of the best things you can do for your local patch is to introduce native plants. Often immaculate gardens will harbour a wide array of non-native species that could outcompete native wildflowers. These plants might look great, but what our pollinators really want are native plants that they have evolved to feed from. So this spring, try planting some common knapweed or bellflower seeds and give our pollinators a helping hand. You could also plant some native British herbs, such as wild garlic or corn mint, which would be beneficial for you and local wildlife. Build a hedgehog highway. Hedgehogs are easily one of the nation's favourite mammals, but it is estimated that hedgehog numbers have declined by 98% since the 1950s. They desperately need our help. One way to help our beloved hedgehogs is to make a hedgehog highway through fenced gardens in your neighbourhood. Working with your neighbours, you could create a clear pathway for your local hedgehog population so they don't get stuck in urban gardens. Hedgehogs can travel upwards of 1 mile per night, so having the ability to travel freely through our gardens hugely helps them go about their nightly business. Let your grass grow. Letting your grass grow not only encourages wildflower growth, but also helps protect the wildlife that calls your garden home. Frogs, newts, dormice and slowworms are just some of the smaller animals that could be harmed by mowing your lawn. Having longer grass allows for a better shelter for creepy crawlies and provides habitats for amphibians and small mammals. So, # grow for your world today. Care for local birds. Putting out a variety of different bird feed is a great way to attract different birds to your garden and help out bird populations at the same time. After introducing a food source into your garden, you will notice very quickly that all sorts of birds appear in your garden. Prioritising times of year when extreme weather events occur, such as droughts or extremely cold spells, will ensure that birds are cared for in these difficult times. With nearly 30% of birds in Great Britain being threatened with extinction and the likelihood of extreme weather events to increase due to climate change, providing extra food could really help local bird populations flourish.
Oxford scientists are assessing whether the technology behind their COVID-19 jab could be used to protect people from the deadly Nipah virus. If clinical trials are successful, it would be the first ever vaccine for the disease. Over the last week, people have begun receiving the jab at the University of Oxford as part of the first human trial of the new vaccine. COVID vaccine developer Professor Dame Sarah Gilbert said that work on the Nipah vaccine started in 2017 and was paused during the COVID-19 crisis. Outbreaks of the Nipah virus have mostly been found in South Asia, and the virus can be fatal in up to 75% of cases. Nipah virus can be transmitted to humans from animals such as bats or pigs, or contaminated foods, and can also be transmitted directly from human to human. In humans, it can cause acute respiratory infection and fatal encephalitis, swelling of the brain. The virus was first identified 25 years ago, but there are currently no treatments or vaccines available to help when outbreaks emerge. But the new vaccine, CHADOX1 Nipah B, could be the first if it reaches safety and efficacy expectations. Some 51 people aged 18 to 55 will participate in the trial, which is being led by the Oxford Vaccine Group and is being funded by the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, the CEPI. The JEB was developed using the same viral vector vaccine technology found in the University of Oxford and AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine. The project will run for 18 months, with further trials expected to follow in a Nipah-affected country. Dame Sarah, principal investigator at the University of Oxford's Pandemic Sciences Institute, said, "The University of Oxford's work on the Nipah virus vaccine started in 2017 but was paused during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our work developing the COVID-19 vaccine will now help us prepare this Nipah vaccine for licensure, ensuring we're ready to prevent future outbreaks of this devastating disease from spreading." Professor Brian Angus, the trial's principal investigator and professor in infectious diseases at the University of Oxford, said, "Nipah virus was first identified in 1998, and yet 25 years on, the global health community still has no approved vaccines or treatments for this devastating disease. Due to the high mortality rate and the nature of Nipah virus transmission, the disease is identified as a priority pandemic pathogen. This vaccine trial is an important milestone in identifying a solution that could prevent local outbreaks occurring, while also helping the world prepare for a future global pandemic." Dr. In-Kyu Yoon, acting executive director of vaccine research and development at CEPI, added, "Nipah has epidemic potential with its fruit bat hosts found in areas home to over 2 billion people. This trial is a step forward in efforts to build a suite of tools to protect against this killer virus. Knowledge gained could also inform development of other paramyxovirus countermeasures."
Fewer people died in non-fire incident emergencies attended by firefighters in Oxfordshire last year, new figures show. Across England, Fire and Rescue Services attended more than 199,000 non-fire incidents in the year to March 2023, a 2.3% increase from the year before. However, fatalities at these incidents rose by 17% overall, which the Fire Brigade Union said was caused by a decade of cuts and more firefighters leaving their jobs. Firefighters routinely attend a range of emergencies other than fires, such as flooding, traffic collisions, or assisting other emergency services with medical issues. Home Office figures show the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service reported 38 deaths in non-fire incidents that they attended last year, down from 56 in 21-22. There were 3,875 deaths across the country, equivalent to 20 per 1,000 non-fire incidents attended. One of the main drivers of the overall surge in deaths was a 52% in the number of deaths in medical incidents. There were 624 recorded in 2022-23, with two in Oxfordshire. Matt Rack, Fire Brigade's Union General Secretary, said, "We've suffered more than a decade of cuts, with one in five firefighter jobs lost since 2010. The result is that response times are now worse than ever before. But we are also well aware that firefighters are increasingly responding to emergencies without the correct resources and fire engines. To reverse this trend, we urgently need investment from central government. In the areas covered by the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service, there were 1,855 non-fire incidents attended, a 1.9 increase from the year before. Of these, 444 were road traffic collisions, 194 were flooding or rescue from water, and 144 were medical incidents. A spokesperson for the National Fire Chiefs Council said, "It's always incredibly sad to see loss of life at incidents that our fire and rescue service colleagues have attended. Whether that be a fire or another incident, such as a road traffic collision or water-related incident, we know it has a profound effect on the local community and the fire and rescue service. Fire and rescue services are committed to ensuring, through road and water safety and prevention work, that these fatalities continue to fall, to achieve a greater reduction in the long term. In areas such as medical incidents and collaborating with other emergency services, fire services have a wide range of ways in which they respond to incidents and support blue light partners, and these are based on local arrangements between fire and ambulance services." A Home Office spokesperson said, "The government is committed to ensuring fire services have the resources they need to do their important work and keep the public safe. In 2023-24, fire and rescue service authorities will receive about £2.6 billion. Decision on how to deploy their resources, including staff, are a matter for each fire and rescue authority."
Keen readers can get a look at a digitised version of a copy of the first edition of literary classic The Canterbury Tales. The 1476-77 edition, printed by William Caxton and owned by Merton College, is considered one of the best preserved amongst the estimated 21 surviving copies. Unique for hand-drawn decorations, including gold illumination and floral borders, the book is assumed to have been commissioned by or for a London Company of Haberdashers member whose arms appear on the first leaf. Despite being riddled with errors recognised by Mr. Caxton himself, the manuscript has undergone 15th century to early 16th century amendments. Former Oxford Mayor, Alderman William Wright, is believed to have donated the classic to the college between 1620 and 1630.
TV presenter and Cotswold Farm Parks Adam Henson is teaming up with a pub owner for a series of rare breed supper clubs. Mr. Henson has teamed up with Butcombe Pubs and Inns and will be coming to the Prince of Burford in Burford on March the 28th. He will also be in Corsham on January the 25th, followed by a meeting in Roeborough on February the 29th. Mr. Henson, who has a titular beer with Butcombe Brewing Company and Butcombe's head chefs, will share their love of rare meats, local produce and beer. Mr. Henson said, "I'm delighted to be hosting these supper clubs with Butcombe Pubs and Inns. We both share a passion for rare breeds, excellent local produce, and great beer, so it makes sense we team up." Tickets cost £95 per person.
Concerns have been raised over severe flooding in an Oxfordshire village after emergency road closures are put in place. Villagers say rainfall in recent days have seen the worst flooding in Islip since 2019, as many parts of the county remain under alert. It came as Storm Henk wreaked havoc across the county. On Tuesday, the River Rae spilled onto Lower Street, which has been closed to drivers as residents are forced to place closure signs on either end of the road. Mill Street was also closed to through traffic with motorists diverted. Additional sandbags have also been deployed to assist householders in protecting their properties. Paul James, 70, who has lived on Lower Street for 5 years, said, "It does seem to be coming more frequent. We have three or four floods a year, and they can last from anywhere to 1 week to 3 weeks, making this road impassable. We are a bit concerned that nobody from the council is taking it seriously enough to give instructions on what we're supposed to do about it." There are some very old and now damaged signs which the neighbours take in turn to put up until the next van or 4x4 mows them down, thinking they can get through the flood. Water has come up to our curb, and in our particular case we have another few inches spare, but it's worrying as it's happening so much more regularly now. Emma Wilkinson, 60, said, "We've definitely had a couple of cars stuck, so I think better road signage would help all of us, and clearer information of how flooded it needs to be before it's dangerous for cars to go through." The Environment Agency said peak levels were expected to be lower than in November 2019. Alison Butler, 58, who lives on the corner of Mill Street, said on Tuesday, "We get the flood warnings, but it didn't come in till 7:30 this morning. We could have done with it last night, really, and we have to hope it doesn't get much deeper." The worry is, as soon as a car breaks down, then the road is blocked and there's no management. An Oxfordshire County Council spokesperson said, "Islip is one of several occasions where signs have been provided locally to deploy when required. In most cases, the parish councils let us know when signage is erected, so the correct paperwork for road closures can be prepared. We are also informed when the roads are clear of water again." Flooding was also expected in Murcott and Ambrosden, while the road between Wood Eaton and the Ring Road at Marston was underwater and closed. A fallen tree on the A34 caused heavy delays on Tuesday between the A44 and the M40 near Oxford. Rail travel was disrupted by a tree blocking the railway at Appleford, with the lines between Didcot Parkway and Oxford blocked. The towpath along the River Thames in Oxford was also flooded, closed due to flooding between Fiddler's Island and Sidlings.
The County's Wildlife Trust is calling on bird lovers to keep their eyes open for one of the country's most spectacular natural sights. This time of the winter is the perfect opportunity to spot the large, swirling gatherings of starlings known as murmurations, according to the Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire Wildlife Trust. The Trust's spokesman, Pete Hughes, said, "Starlings are beautiful birds when seen up close, their iridescent feathers shining all colours of the rainbows as they sing their hugely varied and complex songs. However, they are perhaps most famous for performing their huge aerobatic murmurations, sometimes in their hundreds or thousands. Birds come together just before dusk to roost together. This is the best time of year to see the show, and our reedbed nature reserves are good places to catch it." Find out more about the local nature reserves where you can see them at bbowt.org.uk.
A series of crime novels set in Oxford has won praise from fellow authors and critics. Lost and Found is the third novel in the D.I. Wilkins series. It follows a killing in November and the broken afternoon. The novels feature a double act, Oxford-educated D.I. Ray Wilkins and his unruly partner, D.I. Ryan Wilkins, who is no relation. The Times has described the series as Inspector Morse for the 2020s, and the novels have also won praise from spy novelist Mick Herron, who is based in Oxford and has written a successful series of novels about a team of MI5 agents who have fallen on hard times. Mr. Herron, whose stories have been adapted for an Apple TV Plus series called Slow Horses, said, "Ryan and Ray go from strength to strength, and this, their third outing, is the best yet." Simon Mason has created crime fiction's most entertaining double act in decades. Mr. Mason, who has worked as a publisher and as a writer, told crimetime.co.uk in 2022, "Ryan is not what you would call a good role model. Indeed, to look at him hanging around town in his baggy trackies, loop jacket and plaid baseball cap, you'd be forgiven for assuming him to be a member of the criminal classes. But he's not. He's a detective inspector in the Thames Valley Police, having passed out top of his year in training." Alas, the training did nothing for his manners. He has a very low irritation level and zero tolerance for privileged elites. He's only in Oxford because the Wiltshire force transferred him after an unpleasant incident with the Bishop of Salisbury. At the start of Lost and Never Found, a wayward celebrity's Rolls-Royce Phantom is found abandoned. The paparazzi go wild. On Oxford's meaner streets, homeless Lena Wojtek searches nervously for the man known as Waitrose, a familiar sight, pushing his trolley of possessions, but he's nowhere to be found either. Mr. Mason has pursued parallel careers as a publisher and an author, whose young adult crime novels Running Girl, Kid Got Shot and Hey, Sherlock, feature the 16-year-old slacker genius Garvey Smith. He is a former managing director of David Fickling Books, where he worked with many acclaimed writers, including Philip Pullman. He has also taught at Oxford Brookes University. At first he wrote books for adults, then books for children, which grew up at roughly the same rate his own children grew up, and now he is back writing books for adults again. He has also written a work of non-fiction, The Rough Guide to Classic Novels. Colin Dexter's Oxford-based Inspector Morse novels inspired the ITV dramas Inspector Morse, Lewis and Endeavour. Series 9 of Endeavour, the last, finished in March last year.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.